Welcome to episode 39 of African Couch Potato, The Mashup. I'm your host, Gina Shedile. Last week, we spoke to queen of reality shows, Portia Hlubi. And today, we're speaking about starting and running production houses with Johnny Nkabele. Johnny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, brother?
I'm very good. Did I pronounce your name properly?
You're the first person to do so.
Are you Sotho?
I'm Bedi.
Bedi,
yeah.
Okay. So, from Limpopo.
From Limpopo, yeah.
Then you ran away from the avocados.
With the avocados.
With the avocados.
You came here, overpriced them.
21 years ago, you start a post-production suite.
Yes. Man?
What? Firstly, are you not scared to go broke by starting something of your own?
Look, so I was very fortunate. I used to work for Mnet, and at that, I used to work for Channel O Africa.
Mm.
So it came a point where Channel O Africa was being shut down, and we were going to be on a program where they either put us in different departments or we are told to leave, but then they give you salary for a period.
Yeah.
But I had a very good relationship with my producers and the people I was reporting to. Mm. And they told me there's a new telenovela coming up, and if you can set up, we'll give you the contract. So I was fortunate to actually start it with a contract in hand.
Yeah.
It was only after that contract finished that then you realized what starting a business and running a business is. Starting was easy because, like, you know, I had money coming in.
Mm.
But then there was a part where you had to now go look for business.
Yeah.
So that's where you actually get to learn how hard it is, you know.
So when you said you had producers you were working with, you were an editor.
So I was an editor. Then I was reporting, obviously, to my producers at Mnet.
Yeah.
So when I was leaving, I told them, this is the plan. They're like, okay, there's something coming up. Are you keen? I'm keen. Set up. And then I was good. So, yeah, I think the start was quite nice, but it was only afterwards that you actually learned the up and downs of running a business where you don't have a whole year contract in this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you then start shop? Do you shop around for junior editors? Do you now have to go and find a place? So, because you've been kicked out, essentially,
of
your work building.
Yeah. So, luckily, I had a reputation of my own. I still do. And so when I started my own thing, I got young people that I can actually train, groom to work the way I want to work, because I obviously understand my clients and I need to get people who can feed off that, right? So train a couple of people. You train people, they leave. You train them as soon as they feel that they're good enough. Then you have to start afresh and stuff. But I think training people is also like a nice thing, because you in the industry, there's a lot of people who can say, that guy is the person who actually taught me this game. So it was not a bad thing in essence, but it was training, because again, you can't really afford very experienced editors.
Yeah.
So when you're starting, so you have to go from the ground up.
Mm.
Yeah.
But now how do you balance? Because you are now running a business, which means that you are a businessman.
Yeah.
And you also have to do the work. Where do you let go? Because the juniors are obviously, they're still junior.
Yeah.
So they're not going to edit to your level. How do you say, this is where I stop overseeing and this is where I focus on clients, or this is what I have to keep polishing until it's right?
Look, and it's not even complicated. When you think about it, it sounds complicated. But when somebody comes and prepares something for you, right, they prepare footage for you.
Mm.
And I come in, I edit. So they know what that footage looked like when it was still raw.
Mm.
And they know where you've taken it. There's no effects. It's just how you tell the story. You take a word from there, you take a word from there, you mesh it together and become something dope. And then from there, you add some music in there and it's something nice. But for the fact that this junior editor has seen that footage raw and they've seen what you're able to do with it.
Yeah.
That's the best learning you can do, other than having to sit with somebody with a chalkboard and explain to them what needs to be done.
Yeah.
When they actually have worked with the material and see what that material comes up to become, is the best training you can actually ever give for anybody. I was trained like that myself.
Mm.
Yeah.
And did you go to school for it?
Yeah. I went to Brest University for it. I fell in love with editing. I grew up playing basketball.
Yeah.
So, you know, between the games, I would have my camcorders. I'll record the games, go home, plug a couple of cables, you know the VHS, right?
Yes.
It's got the yellow, it's got the red, and it's got the white
gear. Yeah.
So what I'll do is, after recording my games, I'll take the VCR, take that cable, plug the video and one cable into the VCR,
yeah,
and then take another cable from the sound music player, plug it in there. So now you've got video, sound signal from the camera.
Yeah.
And then you've got a soundtrack.
Mm.
Right. So I did that in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I actually fell in love, because then you cut to the beat, you put titles. It was nice.
Mm.
And you actually, so I followed through with that for my career in school. And then I went to vets. And then that was the beginning of where I am today.
Don't your parents want you to be more of something successful? So how do you explain to them that you're just going to cut pictures?
Yeah. Look, and the interesting part is that I come from a single parent home, and I wanted to go to vets. And I think my mom somehow figured that I'm not going to be able to afford this, mm-hmm. you know. Fill in the form, gave it to her to send to vets. I found that form hidden somewhere in the wardrobe because she couldn't.
She didn't submit it.
Yeah, but I was mad at first, but I understood why, right? So then somehow I managed to hustle my way into vets.
Mm.
And the course I was doing, they only take 25 students.
Yeah.
Because now you need equipment, we need to share cameras, we need to share edit suites and stuff. So they couldn't take as many people as other courses can, because they just need textbooks. So I went through the whole interview process. You know, coming from high school, you are going for this interview at the vets university. You're nervous,
yeah.
right? On top of being nervous, there's like 3 lectures there. Then they've got a camera. Then I want to be behind the scenes. I don't want to be in the scene. So it was difficult. You had to go through a number of tests that you actually write, watch movies, analyze, and then write a report. Then you get accepted in the course. So it was a nice journey getting into it. But when my mom saw that I was passionate about it, yeah, she became at ease. I wanted to be a chartered accountant. I was very good with accounting and stuff.
Yes.
But I wanted to do it for wrong reasons.
Mm.
My uncle had a very nice car, had a very nice house. He was a chartered accountant.
Those sound like all of the right reasons.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? So, but I was good with accounting. So that was my plan B.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to someone from your show who's saying that there's no plan B.
Yes.
I had a plan B in terms of just going to the commerce. But my first love was the creative side of things. And you know, when you love something, there's no way you're not going to be good at it. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And, you know, I'm glad that you say you had a plan B. I didn't have a plan B. It was all or nothing, because what I thought I wanted to be was a doctor. So, and I was so good at that was my, like, I wanted to do neurosurgery and operate on people's brains.
Yeah.
Then my maths teacher was like, but if you look at all of the stuff we are good at, it's writing, it's pitching, it's public speaking. So rather go do journalism. Yeah. Then I did that. And that's how I got to where I am now. I wasn't as brave as you yet to now go and start my own post-production house. After that contract that you get, yeah, how do you then deal with the drought of not having money?
So the fact that I had a very minimal team,
mm.
actually helped. So the one advice that my producer, who became my client, they gave me advice to say, save money,
mm.
because you just never know. I mean, I was invoicing like about 120K a month for the first time. You come in from a salary, you come into this thing, you know, you buy cars, you live in the life. If I wake up now and I go to Cape Town, tell my woman, hey, listen, let's fly to Cape Town.
Yeah.
You know, go to Cape Town, live the life, come back, work is coming, invoices are coming, but then come a point where all of that stop.
Yes.
So I was given the advice to say, save money.
Yeah.
Save money, save money, save money. So I did save, luckily, but also keeping my team at minimal was the best thing as well.
Mm.
Because then when there's no work, you only have 2 people to worry about, you know. And then work comes, but it comes for 3 months and then it stops. 3 months, then it stops.
Mm.
So we didn't struggle much, to be honest with you. You know, we'll go for like a month without work, and then from there we got. And it was mainly because of the work that we were doing. You know, once you have a reputation in the industry, work will always come.
Yeah.
The only thing is that I've always minimized the number of projects that I would take, because it's exciting when everybody comes and says, listen, we've got a show. Are you able to edit this show? You're thinking, it's going to give me 600K. Yeah, bring it. But then do you have the resources? Do you have the capacity to do that? Because when people came to my business, they came to me.
Yes.
Right? They did not come to just as a company.
Yes.
They come to you. When you did not edit this job, they are able to see from a mile away.
Yeah.
You know, so being the only person in there, the people that you're training, they're not there yet.
Mm.
You know, it took a while for me to produce a number of editors that I can even send to other companies and say, these are my people.
Yeah.
You know, give them work. And if I can't do this thing, they can do it for sure. You know,
mm.
so it was difficult. So I had to minimize the work that I was taking, because you don't want to bite more than you can chew as well. Because then the minute you don't deliver to one person in the industry, our industry is very small.
Yes.
The minute you fail on deliver on one person, he goes and talk about you through to other people.
Mm.
And then they write you off. You know, we are living in the
cancel culture. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I've been canceled once, twice, you know, but you make your way back.
Yeah.
Luckily, I think in our space, I can freelance. I can go freelance as an individual.
Yeah.
Right. If business is not coming in, I go freelance to cover my overheads and. So I'll be able to freelance. Reputation is built again. And then you come back, then they still want to come to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, it's been not easy, but doable.
Yeah.
In essence, yeah.
Do you think your chartered accountant thinking is what helped with the saving?
No.
Because I was going to say, accountants are the first one to tell people to save. Nah. But saving is not easy.
Nah, dude, like I was living the life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was living, I didn't save sufficient. I did save, but not sufficient.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but I didn't also need that. I think it was only during COVID that I felt that I did not save as much as I should have.
Yeah.
But having those moments where you have like a month and a half with no work, it wasn't bad. It was it was still manageable, because now when you get another project for the next 3 months, you have to replace the savings that you tapped into.
Yes.
You know. So yeah, it was only after COVID that then I learned the importance of
you know,
managing finances.
Did they ever take away your cars or your house?
Yeah, my car was taken.
Mm.
My car was taken. Like it is, you know, when they take your car, it's like you've got like a period where you can make a plan.
Yeah.
But this is during the COVID though.
Yeah.
So this was during COVID. So I think it was understandable. It was dry, quiet. And then whatever came at that time, you take.
Do you not question yourself when they start taking your cars, your assets, if you're really in the right space to sustain your life?
Look, I think during COVID, we all experienced that. I don't think during COVID, anybody who experienced that would question themselves, but they will understand that we are in this kind of space where people are losing their houses, people are losing business.
Mm.
Most businesses actually even, they scale down a lot. You know what I mean? Some packed and some business that you would not even think about. You know, I think Moyo as well. Moyo was like a very established establishment and they shut down. So if Moyo can shut down, I'm not gonna kick myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I understood because of the COVID, but for the fact that I've been able to survive for the past 10 years, you know, I didn't really question myself as much.
What's the worst decision financially that you have made with money that you know was supposed to be for work?
I bought a car. I bought a 7-seater, you know, Viano looking like a car, stuff like that. So that's the worst decision I've done.
Yeah.
Right? Because that car then came with installment. It was a nice, very fancy car, came with installment. You can fold seats inside. It had a table. It was nice. I think luckily the universe did listen to my heart, because I did regret that. And luckily I got in a car accident with that car.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I got an accident with a car and nothing happened to me. Like literally, I just got a scar here from my watch. But the insurance was able to pay for the car and I didn't replace the car. And I actually got a bit of money from that insurance. And yeah, but
yeah,
that's one mistake that I know that I did financially.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now back to the work that you do. How do you get those contracts? Like I know you are trusted, but now, if it's long form, you're working at this every single day.
Yeah.
How do you maintain that?
So our industry, and you pitch as well, right? Mm-hmm. So I've learned that in our industry, deals are not signed in those boardrooms.
Yes.
Right. You got to be out there. You got to be out there. I'm friends with the guys. I'm friends with a lot of guys in the industry. We go out for drinks. We go out for coffee. And that's when we speak about, dude, we've got this thing coming up. Are you keen on it? I'm keen. And then things develop.
But so
oftentimes you just get random calls from random people asking you for quotations and stuff. I don't go out there to say, listen, this is who we are, this is what we're doing. But oftentimes people come to us and say, listen, actually, we had a good reputation at some point with MultiChoice.
Yeah.
That whenever they commission you for a show, they make a recommendation to say, please use these guys for post-production.
Yeah.
So they've got that. So that's how we actually have always gotten the business.
And what has been some of your favorite productions to work on?
I think one of my favorite productions to work on was iHostela. And the reason for that is because after we did iHostela season one, we were used as the benchmark of how this show should be edited, right? So if you look at Mnet now, or if you look at Mzansi Magic now, almost all their shows look like a hostel in terms of the treatment and stuff. So we kind of set a trend, and they then would recommend to every other post-production house to say, this is how we want this show to look like.
Mm.
So for me, that was one of the proudest moments for me, because when I look at Mzansi Magic now, it's literally the template that personally I've created.
Yeah.
You know.
So how would you tell the next kid, or how would you advise them into starting a production house?
I think the biggest thing is bring your own personality. Mm. You know, if I take the same footage and give it to Gino and give it to Johnny, it's going to come looking different.
Yeah.
Based on your style of telling stories. Mm. If me and you are walking down to Sandton City and we get marked on the way, right? How are we going to tell the story when we get here? It's going to be different.
Very different.
I'm going to add a little bit of humor in it. I'm going to add, you can make it very dramatic. And, and so don't try to tell your story like Gino, because then if Gino can tell his story like this, be original.
Yeah.
Bring your own flavor, bring your own personality into this, because this is art.
Mm.
You know, and art with art, I can't say because Picasso does this, I must do it. No, I need to bring what I can bring.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So the most important thing is just bring your own flavor, bring your own personality. We are all talented in our own ways. But if you work on your craft, we're going to love it one way or the other. You look at the rappers, you look at Kulichana, you look at AKA, you look at Max, right? They all rap different. But, or do you mean the volume?
Yes.
Or Jeba.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They all rap different, but they are all bringing something that they can say, they can claim and say, this is my style of Motswako, this is my style of trap. You
know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's more, it's mainly about just bring your own flavor.
What's the retirement plan?
Retirement plan?
Yes.
I don't even think anybody in our industry think of retiring.
That's the thing. Nobody thinks of retiring, but at some point you will get old. People will lose interest. Your company won't do as well. There'll always be younger, better, faster, up and coming people.
Yeah. Look, I think for me, I would love to produce a lot of dope movies, dope series that they can transcend the time. You know what I'm saying? Like 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now, you can still be watching this show, like generations to say, I created that. And it can run itself. You know what I mean?
What have you watched that you were impressed with?
Locally or internationally?
Locally.
Silverton Sage.
Yes.
I think it was nicely done. I think it was nicely packaged. The production quality there was just proper. But obviously, you know, Netflix pumps a lot of money into resources into these things. So Silver Sausage for me was one of the best productions I've seen out of this country.
And internationally?
Internationally, Money Heist.
Why?
Look, for me, seeing a production that is not from the Americans, right? This is like a foreign language.
Yes.
And even when you dub it in English, and the way the dubbing was so
spot on
done. Mm. If I had to listen to Money Heist with the original voices, I don't think I'll enjoy it as much as I do with the
English.
With the English or the new actor voices.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was so well done. And for me, I do have a dream of having a local production that can be dubbed and can still be appealing to the international market, because we speak English, but the Portuguese and the Spanish, speaking countries, if they can watch our shows and actually enjoy them in Spanish, for me, that's like something.
What would you think would be like the greatest, you know how when we were growing up, there was Izo Izo?
Yeah.
Which was like, it set the premise for what happens at schools.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we as school kids, we knew, our parents didn't so much. What would you like to take to the world and say, this is how Mzansi is?
I think the consumption of social media, I think for me, it's concerning and how it also influences, because how we live now, we are influenced by Twitter. We are influenced by, we're pressurized by Instagram.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So for me, we need to find a way to educate young people, or just generally to say, listen, guys, what we see on this social media, it's not what it is, but yet we follow those trends, right? I would put myself under pressure to go buy my girlfriend a car or a particular handbag because it's Gucci, because now I need for her to post it on social media.
And tag you.
And tag me on
it,
right? Then all the other ladies can see that, who is this guy?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So the fact that all of those things are not real, you know, or even if they are real, people are getting this money, you know, money that you worked hard for, you're not going to waste it the way these guys on social media waste it. But yeah, it's almost become the way of living to say, if you're not doing this, if you don't do this, you are not where everybody wants you to be or want to be. Mm. You know what I mean? So for me, it's like the whole social media situation. For me, I think it bothers me a lot because I've got daughters who are growing up who are going to be also exposed to these kind of things. And now people commit suicide, people become victims of human trafficking simply because you want the life that you see on social media.
Yeah. How would you encourage the young upcomers now on how to get into production? What would you say?
Into production. I mean, post-production.
Mm.
And post-production is not something that you can actually do it for a quick buck. You have to love it. You have to have passion for it. The hours are long, right? So for young people, the TV industry is very huge, right? Yes. You've got Bonang on TV or you've got someone on TV, but there is 20 other people behind the scenes.
Yes. Right?
If we all want to be like Bonang, it's not going to work.
Mm.
But if we actually research and say, I love the camera work, I love the makeup, I love the wardrobe, I love dressing people, I'm a stylist. Mm. You know, for me, you have to find that thing that you love, that you're passionate about. The hours are long. This industry, it's nice. People think like, you know, it's dealing with celebrities, blah, blah, blah. But the hours are long. If you don't have passion for it, you're not going to survive in the industry. So find that thing that you love, that you're good at, and then be that in the industry as well.
Thank you so much. That was Johnny Kgapelo of Just Media. For now, as usual, goodbye and keep binging until you hear from me again. Okay.